Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
And it's part two. It's part two of our 200th episode spectacular.
Yes.
200th episode spectacular.
We're getting silly. We're having fun. This is part two.
Yeah, part two. We did all the voicemails.
Letting the good times
roll. All the voicemails and stuff.
The drinks are settling in.
We released that to you guys first and put that out there as a big like thank you to anybody who's ever listened to us and stuff like that. But, we got all those voicemails, Jay. And I did tell everyone that there was a prize in it. For anybody who sent us a voicemail, the best voicemail was going to pick something from the loot chest. And I think you and I were both in agreement. The best voicemail, the one that had us rolling on the floor a little bit, was Sean from What Does It Matter? So
yes.
He's going to get to pick a prize from the loot chest. I do have two runners up that are also going to get the...
It'll be a surprise, though.
Right. I'm going to reach out to them personally. I'm not going to announce them here on the show. But one of them was the one that was the most heartfelt that made me... feel the best, and since my dad can't win that, it's someone else that left us a voicemail. So I'll reach out to them personally, and they'll be able to get something as well. Probably not as you know, not something from the loot chest, but something. They're all going to get something. And then I'm also the other one that made us laugh, like the runner up for making us laugh. I'm going to be sending them something as well. So I want to thank anyone who took the time to reach out to us. But this episode, Jay, you and I are going to be doing our top five movies that made us. So I know that this is like kind of cryptic. Like, what does this mean? And really, what I'm getting into here with this, with like these movies that made us. It's like these are the movies that are probably most influential to us. Like these are the movies that,
right?
Make us.
They made
fans.
The most impact on you,
exactly,
in one way or another.
And I think like also these are the movies. Like the way I saw it was the movies that made us. Like these are the movies that I've seen in possibly the triple digits. Like I've seen so many times that like it never gets old. It never gets tired. It's that film that you just absolutely love, and you can't shower. With enough praise. And I think there's a lot of movies that you and I both love. There's a lot of movies that you would point to and say are technically better than these movies.
Oh, my list is extremely skewed.
Right.
Because these are a lot of childhood memory impressions
exactly.
that had such an effect on me. But also, when I got into films again, when I was like 15, 16 years old, that kickstarted that new chapter of me getting back into movies and the power of that.
It's nostalgia is what this comes down
just,
to.
It's just instilled in you.
This is nostalgia. And
100%.
And I would say that like the movies that are on my list, they influenced how I watched movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like from this point on, they became like the high bar. Like I'm comparing other movies in their genre or the movies around them to them. You know, is it as good as that? No. Like these are my high watermark movies. These are movies that just spoke to me in such a way. Some of them have influenced other things that I've done in my life. Some of them have influenced my humor, who I am now as an adult and stuff.
Yeah.
These truly are the movies that made us, that make us who we are as movie fans.
So are we trying to do like a legit top five, or are we just gonna
No, this is a legit top five.
Okay. I did do a top five. Kind of hard, though. This is really hard. This whole list was extremely... This is probably one of the hardest ones I've ever done because I didn't 100% know how to do it. But really, when it came down to it, I just went through my memory of films and the ones that stuck out to me, the ones that I awkwardly made an impression on me in better or worse situations. But for some reason... just made a lasting impression the most over the years.
Well, I'll say this.
So mine is definitely going to be a little bit different than yours. I would say that.
Yeah,
so
because...
Just so everybody knows in advance.
All of these movies I definitely saw before I was even a teenager. Like if I did like eight movies that influenced me when I was a teenager on, that would be a completely different list.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that would be all my cult movies and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's another list that I should save for maybe like a time when I'm doing something with Mark, you know, because like it's definitely a different list. But probably if I didn't like these movies that we're about to discuss, I wouldn't even... I wouldn't like, you know, I probably wouldn't have liked these
cult movies. I think all of my movies are before I was 18 years old.
So all right, well, let's just get into it, man.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into our top five movies that made us. All right, Jay, here we go. Number five movie that made you. Number five movie that's most influential on you. What is it, my friend?
2001's Below.
Where did you get this stuff?
Columbia.
I can't feel my face.
Oh, all right. You saw this before you were a teenager?
I'm just wondering. Well, not before, but I mean, I was a teenager, but I mean, before I was 18, I said, but like,
What did this do for you?
It's like 17, 16, 17.
Teach you how to take the booger sugar just right? You
know? So this is around the time when I got into movies, when you know, little Jay, we got friendly, we became fast friends, he introduced me to movies again, and so I started watching movies heavily.
I should say, this is one of those movies that I hadn't seen until I met you. You made me watch it,
right,
and you hyped it up so much that I fucking hated it.
Of course, but... so this came in theaters. This was out in theaters, obviously, when I started watching movies again. So I went to the movies, and this had the power and the effect and the cool factor, but also the grounded reality of a true story, that it had a whole scope for me. It landed a big punch, but it also landed a big punch in a way where I wanted to be a drug dealer,
right,
for literally maybe 2 weeks.
What?
Jay and I were going to, it made that much of an impression where we were going to pot. We had the grand idea, because I was working at a country club at the time. I was going to give my cart boys, they're going to be my lackeys. They're going to be pushing the dope while I was working at the country club.
Listen to you, Walter White.
Say my name. Heisenberg, you're goddamn right.
Exactly. I had this whole grandmaster plan. We even bought the pot, and Jay had a whole fucking baggie.
We just
saw all times his fucking mom and sister cleaned his room, which they've never done. Maybe once a year. They did it that weekend.
Because they probably smelled it.
That weekend.
They probably smelled like
skunk.
And they
found it, and he got in so much shit, and that was it. That was our sign. And we're like, okay, this is it. Psh. We gotta stop. This is not for us.
Yeah, because if you can't even hide your pot from a bored 40-year-old housewife,
I know.
You can't hide it from the police, that's for sure.
But it was one of those movies that I absolutely loved. I thought it was so cool. I loved Johnny Depp. I became a huge fan from then on. Just like him as a person. I just thought he was like cool motherfucker. You know, just like a really good looking guy, just really cool. And it was just like one of those impressionable type movies.
I can't get over the fact that you thought that you could be a drug dealer because of this movie.
Dude, I was a fucking punk kid at the time. And we were stupid.
You were the
We were stupid.
Well, like, we
and
just
having
we,
fun.
We just saw The Gentleman where a guy, you know, kind of befriends the upper class and uses
and
that.
And I was going to be the drug dealer through country clubs.
Right. And
pushing pot through teenagers.
He uses that to be the pot dealer in England.
Yeah,
and
that was my idea.
That was your idea. All right. And all because of Blow. Mm-hmm. And Penelope Cruz?
Well.
You mentioned Johnny Depp, but you didn't mention Penelope Cruz.
She was a hot, feisty little thing.
Well, I mean, she was... This is like her breakout role. I mean,
was it though?
I'm pretty sure this was. Yeah,
maybe as far as like American blockbuster, or not. I mean, it wasn't a big blockbuster, but it was like a relatively big budget or mid budget kind of film.
Here's something that you don't know about this list that I probably should have told you, but I didn't, because this is how I prepped the show. I prepped the show in my mind, and I don't feed it to you.
Fuck me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'd like to say that most of the time it is just, you know, complete that I forget to mention it to you, but I most of the time now I'm doing it intentionally. Standout scene, like that scene that is just burned into your brain so much that you love it from this movie.
Black Betty, when that song comes on and he's walking through the airport in that fucking like white jumpsuit and
whoa,
these aviators,
Black Betty.
And he's got that little hop to his step when he's walking through the airport. The cool factor of that is sick.
It's a cool song.
Not just that, but also when he's supposed to meet Pablo for the first time, and he's really nervous, and he only wants to meet George Young, and he's like all nervous about it, he's like, all right, fuck it, and the way he just says, like, all right, fuck it, that still sticks with me to this day.
All right.
Where like I get nervous with a certain kind of situation or something like that, hitting on a girl, whatever it might be, I'll literally do that same type of thing. Like I'll build up and I'll like, all right, just take a minute. Like that, and I literally go back to that fucking scene. I'm just like, all right, fuck it, and I just go, and I just like, fuck it, just go.
Because you don't, because you don't have me anymore. Who used to go? All right, fuck it. Right. And I would get up and go. I'd be right. That guy.
And it's a little weird shit like that. Like that just sticks with me, you know.
Whoa, Black Betty, ambulance. All right, Jay.
I have the poster on my wall.
My number five movie that made me. This is probably, yeah, nope, this 100% is. This is the most recent film on my list. And that's saying something because it's from 1992. It is Jurassic Park.
It's a dinosaur. Uh-huh.
You did. You crazy son of a bitch. You did.
That's my number five movie that made me. I remember seeing this in the theater with my mom. I remember just seeing dinosaurs on screen and how real everything looked and how the action was just so perfect. And it everything just felt like it was happening to me as Tiny Dave was sitting in that seat at watching the T-Rex chase a Jeep and everything. I was like, oh my God. I breathed this movie for an entire year. I had just about every toy that I could get my hands on. I had a T-Rex. I still have the original Jurassic Park T-Rex that I had when I was a kid. It's sitting right next to you. It's right there. That's the one I had when I was in second grade and this fucking movie came out.
I hear you.
I absolutely love this movie. It is just a perfect testament of the popcorn film. Like this is like one of the quintessential popcorn films that Steven Spielberg has made. And if I had to give a standout scene, it's obviously when the power goes out and the T-Rex breaks through and comes out on the road and, you know, throws the one Ford Explorer over the cliff, and just that rampage moment. I absolutely love it with the rain coming down and the score and just the buildup of tension with the water and everything. Fuck, I loved this movie. And to this day, anytime Jurassic Park is on TV or I have nothing else to watch, if anyone's like, oh, you got Jurassic Park, we should give that a spin, it's like, yeah, why not? No, let's do it. I'll watch it. I could probably watch it five times in a day and not be bored with it.
It's one of those magical movies that I also agree. Like it has such an impression on me because it was so, it still holds up. So many of those scenes are so realistic because they're not CGI. So much of it is actually practical. And that's really
70-30 are magical.
And that's what really
number.
Fucking is the magic of it. Yeah. That and the lighting, you know, a lot of it's in the dark. And the rain, you can get away with a lot with that. And it was just so fun. It was so scary.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways. And thrilling.
Our first movie cocktail that we did under the Super mm-hmm. Movie Bros banner. It was the first movie cocktail we did. I was so excited to do that cocktail. And like looking back on it now, I was like, man, I kind of cocked that one up. I think I need to take another pass. Keep the same ingredients, but kind of redo it, present it in a new way. I think we might have a new format for doing that. So I think that'll be the first movie cocktail that I redo will be Jurassic Park. So, all right, Jay, what is your number four?
1990s Dick Tracy.
Tracy!
It's like he's reading my mind.
Extra! Tracy battles bomb!
I'm taking this bomb out of the headlines. I'm rubbing him out.
Hey, Tracy, watch out!
Give Dick Tracy to me.
Go suck an egg!
Dick fucking Tracy, man. This was one of those very early movies where it had three main components that stood out to me to this day.
Tracy. Al Pacino was a revelation.
He really was, too.
I don't love this movie, by the way.
I loved Dick Tracy. I thought he was cool as shit.
He was.
I loved his outfits.
Warren Beatty was cool in this movie.
He was always cool. And I just love gangster movies. I've always been drawn to gangster movies.
Warren Beatty is a Hollywood cocksmith, right? Like he was, yeah.
He's the original, one of the original ones.
Yeah, he's laid some pipe across Hollywood. For sure. He might even still be doing it.
Wow.
To this day.
Yeah. He just had this cool watch, you know, you can talk into his watch. Like, I was obsessed. I thought it was my first original cool guy that, like, I could idolize. And Madonna. Oh, Madonna. See, my first I hate crush. Her in the movie. Oh, my first crush, dude. I loved her. I was smitten. And I'm serious, man. Well, I had a huge crush on her.
You're a year and a half, 2 years older than me, which means I saw this in the theaters with my father. This is one of the few movies I've been to the theaters with my father to see.
Dude, I'm not kidding. I was in like second grade getting in trouble drawing boobs because I was obsessed with her cleavage in this movie.
I was 4 or 5 years old when this movie came out and I saw it in the theaters.
I was at that age fucking horny as shit for Madonna.
I'll bet.
Only in this movie.
Only in this
Other
movie.
Than that, Madonna's never been a turn on for me.
None of the Guy Ritchie movies. But
sure. I have to say, my parents can fucking attest, I rearranged my bedroom to his office. So I had my desk behind the fucking window. I had my little placket. I had Dick Short.
Welcome to Dick Short's Detective Service. Dick what do you need? Short. You need help fighting a dog?
Oh, my God.
Would you lose a sock in the dryer, Mom? Don't worry. I'm going to go get it. This is Dick Short's Detective Service. Whatever you want, I got it. I'll do it, you know? You know what I'm saying, Mom?
Oh, my God. I'm sure my parents were fucking laughing their asses off with me writing on my little pen holder thing, Dick Short.
You know, your mom like walked down the stairs and she was just like,
oh, my God.
We got to go to church. It's Saturday. And it's like, yeah, but he's calling himself Dick again. We got to go back to church. He's got to get right with God.
Oh, my God. But this, this movie.
Strange to be. I know
this has not come up on the show.
It has not.
And that's what's so funny to me. Because well, like, I can't believe that this movie has not really come up before. Even in my movie Cocktail. Yeah, obviously. But
that's what I'm getting
or
to.
Or on other top fives even. But this is one of those weird movies that left a big impression on me.
Movie Cocktail Season 3 is not going to be something that people vote on. It's going to be our first season. Sure.
Yeah.
Where we don't have people voting on it. And each week, we're just going to take turns doing the movies that we've always wanted to do a cocktail for. So, Jay, you will have a chance to do a Dick Tracy cocktail in the next season of Movie Cocktail. We haven't finished season 2 yet, but that will be the next season of Movie Cocktail. Will be the movie that you just want to do. The only rule will be you can't pick a movie that we've already done. So you'll get your chance. It's weird. I don't disagree with this being on your list because of how much it touched you as a child. At the same time, this holds no nostalgia for me, even though this is one of the earliest movies I can remember seeing in the movie theater when I was a kid. I remember my dad falling asleep. I remember me falling asleep. But one of the things, like, this movie was one of the first times that, like, you truly saw a comic being brought to life on screen. Like, this was panel by panel a Dick Tracy comic book, and it's kind of cool. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I kind of look forward to maybe checking it out in the future. All right, Jay, you ready for my number 4? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about it. It's Back to the Future.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
We just did an entire episode.
Yeah.
Episode 199 was all about Back to the Future.
You're untouchable. Yeah.
Right. We gushed over it, but like when I was a kid and I saw this was so magical to me. Just the DeLorean itself, you know, traveling through time and just the adventure that Marty goes on throughout the film. I don't think I even understood the nuances of the story when I first saw it. I just knew that, you know, getting in a car and going 88, you could go through time. That's as a little kid, that's what I remember. But even when I had my Chrysler LeBaron, right? Like, I remember one night, late at night, sleeping over a friend's house, and we were just like, man, where should we go? Like, I'm bored. Everyone's, you're always bored when you're 16. You know, nothing's ever good enough for you. Like, let's drive to the beach. All right. It's like midnight. We pile in a car. We drive to the beach. I'm in my LeBaron. And while I'm going down the Jersey Turnpike, heading to the shore, the whole time I was like, I'm going to get 88 miles an hour. And I'm going to hit fucking cruise control. And I had the score in my car. And I remember as soon as it hit 88, I just pressed play on the CD player. Bum, 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 dun, 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 dun. And it was just me and 4 friends. And we went down to the beach in the middle of the night, only to find out that the beach was closed. You're not actually allowed on it. After night, we had to get in the car and go right home. Only to do it again.
Oh, lovely.
I absolutely love
it. But when you're at that age, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right. Because it was a Saturday night when you're
spending time with your friends. You're doing what you were going to want to do anyway.
Saturday night when you're 17, you had nothing else to do. You just get in the car. You drive.
What did I do? I went to pool halls, parking lots, and diners to smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. That's pretty much all you can do.
That's all you can do. Yeah. Unless you went to a Great American Diner in Langhorne, in which case they didn't care what age you were. They just served you alcohol anyway. So, I mean, that was always fun. And if they decided to card you, you just went to the sad old guy that's sitting at the end. You just go, hey, man, if I slip you an extra couple of bucks and buy you your next beer, will you buy me a beer? Yeah, sure, kid, whatever.
That's how it worked for us.
Yeah. That's how it worked.
It's true.
All right, Jay, what is your number three?
Also, 1990, Edward Scissorhands.
Hey, hi, George Monroe. Whoa, it's a heck of a handshake you got there, Ed.
Can you imagine those hands are hot or cold? And just think what a single snip could do.
Or undo.
This,
all right, man.
This is this was a special film because
for me,
I'm just saying because it was such a unique movie. It was such a weird movie. It was such a fable. It was such a story. It was one of those unique kind of things. I got obsessed with it because I couldn't understand it in a lot of ways. It was very different, you know, because it's a fantasy. It's a Tim Burton fantasy. It's one of his, early masterpieces. So there was so much for me to, explore with this. So I saw it many times when I was younger because of sheer curiosity.
And it's a story of an outsider and a freak.
Which
you can relate to because, people look at you and they go, God damn, it's a big motherfucker.
Well, I've always felt that way. I've always felt that way deep down. And it's beautiful. It's romantic. And it's also sexy at times. I mean, you see a lot of Kathy Baker cleavage and flirting with Edward and Diane West was always a delight playing a great mother and is very, very charming, obviously, and Alan Arkin being funny as shit.
Alan Arkin was
the
great
husband, and there was so much charm in this movie and so much quirkiness and also scariness mixed in with it as well, but it always lasted.
Well, I think
it was one of those yearly movies for me for the rest of my life. And it was one of those kind of special movies that it still holds up to me. And I think it's a beloved movie.
It's a strange film in the fact that
playing Edward 40 Hands as a teenager.
As a teenager,
you
right.
know, you know, shit like that. Like, it still holds up. You know, it's just so fun.
I think I back to it. Movie. And I remember just being weirded out by the juxtaposition of this gothic type creature, which is Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. In this picturesque Pleasantville type setting and stuff.
It always had a big impression on me. And it was one of those kind of weird, quirky things that it always made me become, I don't want to say a Tim Burton defender, but
always.
Some sort.
No,
yeah, probably.
Definitely. Because we talked about this movie once, one other time on the show. And I
was I defending the shit out of it?
You were. Yeah, but probably. I this is the old defunct movie Cocktail, though. And I don't like this movie because I think I saw it later in life than you did.
Oh.
And to me, Tim Burton, he wasn't the director of Beetlejuice or Batman, but when I was aware of what a director was and what a director did and how their style, then I saw Edward Scissorhands and I remember I was like, this is kind of like Beetlejuice and Batman, but it's weird. And I remember just being aware of this is Tim Burton's style. This just smacks of him, and he's all over it. And I didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
I for some reason it was just
that's interesting. It's an interesting way to be introduced to it, I guess you could say, really, with that kind of perception.
Right, because now I know who Tim Burton is and what his style is. That's when I saw it, and I just went ugh. It just feels so much like him. I kind of feel dirty watching it because it just feels like him. It feels like his hair looks like Tim Burton's hair looks.
Oh, God. But yeah, I saw this in theaters. I mean, I remember it was one of those, it's one of those movies. And another movie will come out later on in my top five here. I'll talk more about.
All right.
Yeah.
My number three, Jay. Yeah. This movie is probably my favorite comedy of all time, for sure. And it's definitely a movie that has sort of influenced my humor, or at least the type of humor that I look for in a movie, because it's funny without trying too hard to be funny. It's subtle in its humor, and some of its jokes are so nuanced that you don't catch it until the fourth, fifth, sixth time that you've watched a movie. It's Ghostbusters.
You know, it's just occurred to me, we really haven't had a completely successful test of this equipment.
I blame myself.
So do I.
Well, no sense worrying about it now.
Why worry? Each of us is wearing an unlicensed nuclear accelerator on his back.
Yep. Now let's get ready. Switch me on.
Ghostbusters just speaks to me in such this magical way. First off,
it really does, and it definitely does not for me for some reason. And I love the movie, obviously. I mean, I really do. But for some odd reason, I'm shocked that you do so much, because there's a lot of adult humor.
There is.
And dialogue.
But
and
as
this
a
came
kid,
out when we were kids, and I'm like,
as a kid,
a lot of it went right over my head.
As a kid, the only thing you needed to know about this movie was proton packs. Traps.
I hear you. I know.
Slimer, yep. You know, or Onion Head in the movie, but it was Slimer to
Slimer
us as kids
does, yeah.
Because we watched the cartoon, and just, you know, oozing with cool Bill Murray, like he was just a cool guy. And I remember my favorite character growing up was always Winston. Though I loved Winston, but I don't know why, but that was just always my favorite character. When we played with action figures, I always wanted to play as Winston. So, but that was like my introduction to it, was just this cool factor of it, where it's just like the proton packs and the effects and fighting ghosts and stuff like that. That stuff draws you in as a kid, because it is a kid's movie in that respect. But as an adult, when I started to really get into it and watch it again as I got older, that's when I started picking up on the nuance of the comedy, and the fact of just the premise alone is just so absolutely ridiculous, but it's played so straight that you don't have time to even question that these four doctors, I mean, they are doctors, they're scientists, they taught at Columbia. You know, they are these guys that just start a business of busting ghosts, and it becomes a phenomenon. Like, it makes no sense. Although it makes more sense than Gordon Bombay becoming a national icon, because he coached a team, a Pee Wee hockey team in Minnesota. So it makes more sense than that. But like, you start to question it as an adult, but because they play it so straight, you don't question it at all. And all of Bill Murray's jokes, everything is just so subtle. None of it is truly in your face at all. And it's only after you listen to the dialogue, as you grow up and you watch it like 7, 8, 9 times, are you like picking up on the fact that it's just like, everybody has 3 mortgages today, Ray. And it's only a joke that you really pick up on and laugh at when you're an adult and you have a mortgage, and you go, oh, no, they don't. Who would want that? But Ray does. So it's why, like, in 2020, the film I'm looking most forward to is Ghostbusters Afterlife, because I want it to be good, because I want it to live up to the legacy of Ghostbusters for me. And I'm not sure if it will. I think I'm putting it up on a pedestal that is unfair to it. But I'm not the only one who feels that way about Ghostbusters. So they, you know, Sony has to know what they're stepping into by doing that movie. So yeah, that's my number 3, Ghostbusters. It's always going to hold a wonderful place in my heart. It even gets its own shelf here in the studio, because I love it so much.
All right, man.
All right, Jay, you're number 2, buddy.
Number 2, 89 Batman.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me, man. Don't kill me. Don't kill me, man.
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Makes 89 sense.
89 Batman. Another Burton film.
From Burton to Burton.
Burton to Burton. And, you know, this, obviously, very impressionable. I used to write and draw bat ears over top of my J's in first grade.
Don't go printing this in none of your papers, Knox.
This will always be my Batman. I love this movie. I am on Justin's side, where this is like, I love Burton's take.
Oh, I love this movie.
I love Batman Returns as well. I am a defender.
I don't
like
Batman
Returns. I am one of those people as well. And
hey, yeah, good. Think of the future.
The look, the darkness, the mystery, the feeling. My God, the motherfucking feeling. And the goddamn that ending. That ending is the best ending of all time. That music, the score, the camera shooting all the way up to sky rises until you see the bat symbol in the light with Batman standing there, and like the clock ticking. Oh God, it's like that kind of feeling.
I mean, just the opening alone, where it's just like,
was just phenomenal.
The opening, the one guy,
the way it opens and the way the fucking ends, it's like magical.
He's worried about the mystery of the Batman and the bat.
And the way he fucking comes down
so slowly,
with the cape coming down. Ah, Jesus Christ! It was one of the I love Batman. He's my favorite fucking superhero.
Yeah.
And I love this movie. It kickstarted that whole
It makes sense.
World for me.
We'll never get another Batman like this, but like for like your dad.
You never know. I mean, you know, from what I'm seeing with the Batman with Robert Pattinson, I'm liking the vibe that they're teasing. That's all I'm going to say.
It's not going to be this. It's not going to be this.
I'm not going to say it's this. Nothing can.
Nothing will ever be this again. I mean, it's nothing will ever have that Art Deco style. It'll never have that Tim Burton style that works so well for it. But like for our dad's generation, mm-hmm. you know, Batman was Adam West, you know?
Sure. And I watched that as well.
But for us who are 80s and 90s kids, this is our version of Batman, and we will forever compare every version of Batman to this version right here. Forever.
I loved it.
The Nolan movies were great for story and realism of Batman and stuff like that, and they're fantastic, but they'll never hold a place in my heart in the same way that 89 Batman does.
And I think a big part of that is because of this movie and you know, and Halloween, you know, kids are dressing up because of this movie, because of Burton's Batman, because it stemmed from that.
Yeah.
You know? From their parents.
I got into comic books.
You know, the kids' parents loving that movie and dressing their kids up as Batman. You know, shit like that.
I started reading comic books because of 89 Batman. Now, I remember, like, you know, I remember my first comic book was, I've told this story before, but, like, my favorite comic book, the first comic book, I'm sorry, that I ever read, I was actually in high school, and I had a fantastic job in high school. I was a kid who was on the radar of the disciplinarian, right? Like, I was not well liked by teachers.
Of course.
So to keep me out of trouble during lunch and stuff like that, they decided to give me a job. I had a free period, so they decided that I would eat lunch in a disciplinarian's office. I would have 15 minutes to eat lunch, and then I would do his bidding. Pretty much, I became his crony. Like, that's what they decided for me. I didn't like doing it, but I was literally given no choice. Like, this is what you have to do.
You should have just gone to the gym and worked out or something.
No. Get I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice.
Okay.
I had to be his crony. He wanted me under his thumb because close to him was the best place to keep me out of trouble. But I used to have to clean out lockers for kids that got expelled. I went to a Catholic school, so kids getting expelled was a pretty frequent thing. You can get expelled for almost anything. So I remember cleaning out this one kid's locker, and I found 4 issues of Spider-Man Blue in there. And I was like, I know Spider-Man, stuff like that. I read through it. I was amazed by it. It's a comic book by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. So I decided that, like, I'm going to go to a comic book store, Wade's Comic Madness in Levittown. So I'm in high school. I go to this comic book store, and they were like, well, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I guess I want to finish this series, Spider-Man Blue. They're like, oh, well, that's out of print. We don't have single issues of that, but there's a trade paperback over there. You can go grab that. So I grabbed the trade paperback, and they're like, anything else? And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, what else are you into? I liked 89 Batman. Like, that's my thought process. I liked Batman, you know, and Batman Begins had just come out. So it's like, I like Batman Begins also. So they were like, okay, how about this? You like this by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale? Here is The Long Halloween by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. And I was like, okay. So those are the two comics that I walked away with that day. And ever since, I've been a rabid comic book fan and reader and stuff like that. But if it wasn't for 89 Batman, I would have just been like, nah, you know, fuck it.
Yeah.
What do I need another Batman story for? I got the perfect one with 89 Batman. And then my world got opened up because of it. So maybe 89 Batman should be on my list, but it's certainly, you know, for you, I never put bat ears on my D's. So.
Well, the J, you know, you got the little hat, you got the little cross on the top, and I just get boop, 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 boop.
Yep, I get it.
I just, I don't know.
I could very easily turn the D at the end of David into a dick and balls, though.
I'm sure that was in college when you were doing that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jay, that was your number two. Here's my number two. It's Jaws.
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago, and it's gotten right to my head. Wherever I may roam, by land or sea or foam, show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago, and it got right to my head. Wherever I may roam,
home. You can always hear me singing.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, right?
This is the blood movie of yours. I know.
It is. It really is.
It really is.
I spent summers down the Jersey Shore. So I spent summers on the water and stuff like that. Spent summers at the beach. And like the beach town that I went to, Long Beach Island, which I still go to today and stuff like that, it's very much Amity. It's very much like that. Like when you go on the beach, it feels like that.
It does.
And even to this day, they have what's her name? Mary Sue is the name of the great white shark that is seen going up and down the New Jersey coastline. And there's like even t-shirts you can buy. Mary Sue, please don't eat me.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. So like we always had like that air of like, there are sharks out there.
Yeah, you got me a shirt.
Yeah. And like that's the way like I grew up. I would watch this movie and I'd go down to my grandparents' house that in Tuckerton, New Jersey, you know, on the beach, and we'd go on my uncle's boat and stuff like that. And I would have the image in my head of Ellen Brody opening up that book, and there's a shark that's plunging its nose into the side of a boat and stuff like that. And in my mind, like, that could happen to us. There was danger every time I went into water. But to me, it wasn't scary. It was exciting.
Christ's sake, this is probably one of those movies that was the birth of you being obsessed with that world.
It was, yeah, because
and wanting to get into that career down the line too when you were a child.
That was your
future plans.
We talked about it on the show, but I think at some point, but like I wanted to be, when we talked about Blackfish actually,
right,
I wanted to be a marine biologist when I was a kid. It's what I always wanted to do.
Well, we dived darkly deep into that, right, unfortunately.
I wanted to be a marine biologist, and it does stem from Jaws. Like it does,
of course it does.
Because
yes.
This is the movie that made me want to do that. It's only after I got older and I realized I'm terrible at math and science. STEM is not something I'm good at. So I was never going to pass a college courses doing college level math and science. So I had to give that dream up like very quickly once I got to college. But that's what I wanted to do like with my entire life and stuff like that. But it's because of Jaws. And I think it's just the perfect creature feature, the perfect horror movie. Just, you know, it's perfectly acted. And I think the happy accident of the shark not working for half of it, winds up becoming mythic. It is just a mythic movie. It is just so perfect. And it's another one of those movies where it's like anytime it's on, anytime I need something to watch, but I don't have anything ready at mind, I could just put Jaws on and just be like, yeah, I'm good with this. I'm good with watching this every day of my life. I'm fine with it. All right, Jay, we're here. I didn't really do any honorable mentions.
No, I wasn't thinking about an honorable mentions. This is not really, I mean, that's it's just stupid to do honorable mentions because there's too many.
I think so too.
I think it kind of defeats the whole purpose.
I think gun to my head, I would have to say like my honorable mentions are the movies that made me when I started getting older.
I'd be like rattling off a million movies.
I'll just say mine: Alien, Blade Runner, The Thing, Evil Dead 2, stuff like that. Yeah, that's the once I became aware of filmmaking and what went into making films, those were the movies that I started gravitating towards because I started understanding what filmmaking was. But you know, all these movies that I'm talking about now, this top five, I didn't know what filmmaking was, right? A movie was just something that got put on that kept me entertained. And that's what these, so like the later movies that I got into, that's a list for another time, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Pretty much. And I should say Clerks would probably be another honorable mention.
I think
Clerks hit me at an age where I was.
You do bring that up quite often, where I could tell that's a cherished.
It is
film of yours.
Clerks and Mallrats. You know, that's a time when me and my friend Kenny were in our formidable years as young adults and stuff, and it just spoke to me in a way that is just so perfect. But when I saw it, I was aware of filmmaking. Also, like I said, all these movies that we're talking about, I wasn't.
That was
aware
their
of
blockbuster days.
It was exactly. I was a clerk myself.
Yes, you were.
I was a clerk. Myself.
Hence, it spoke to you.
Yeah, I have some. I should actually do a Patreon of like the annals of, you know, the annals of Dave as a blockbuster.
You should just do a one mic Dave episode
because I had like the
on
worst.
Patreon.
I had some of the
and just rant.
I had some of my best experiences working there, but I had some of my worst too. Like, there's just so many people who, like, you know, when you're a fan of film and stuff like that, and you come across people who. who want to, I mean, they're no different than me. They want to pick out a movie and they just want to be entertained. But when you give them something that is something that's so beloved by you that they've never seen, and they bring it back to you and they're like, I want my money back because I hated this. And it's like, go fuck yourself, dude. Are you fucking kidding
me? Yeah, I can see you'd be horrible at the register.
This movie is a, I used to just walk the aisles and clean up the aisles and like suggest things to people when people were like, you know, I used to be really good. What I was good at.
Yeah, you would not be good at the register.
No. What I was good at Blockbuster was when it's just like, you know, people are like, I'm looking for a movie, but like most of the new movies are out. Like, what do I do? And it's like, all right, I would ask people, what's the most recent film you saw that you really enjoyed? And they would tell me. And then I would be like, all right, let's find you something from that director or something that's in that same vein that you might also enjoy. Yeah, and I'd go into the back catalog then. I would go into the center aisles, deep cuts, and I'd pick them out stuff from there. But what really bothered me was like if someone came back and was just like, yeah, I hated this. And it's like, I want to be like, but that's the same director. It's the same writer. It's the same, you know, it's a similar cast. It's like, you should, by all imagination, you should like this movie, but you don't. Yeah, I want my money back. You suggested this movie to go fuck yourself. You know what? I go to the movies all the time. I see movies that I don't like. Now I get to review them and tell you how much I don't like them. Back then,
wow,
they used to review them to me. This was shit. I remember giving someone Lethal Weapon once because they I forget what buddy cop movie they really liked. And I was like, oh, Lethal Weapon. You like buddy cop. You got to watch Lethal Weapon. So I take them and I show them Lethal Weapon and like I go over what the story is. Mel Gibson, he's fantastic in it. You know, old man, young cop. You're going to love it. Love it. Ridiculous action. It ends with a fight scene on a fucking lawn with cops all around. And they just let it happen. Right? Like they just let it happen. It makes no sense in the world. But it's entertaining as fuck. You're going to love this movie. Yeah, I hated this movie. You hated Lethal Weapon? Give me your Blockbuster card. Just fucking cut it up. Never rent another movie again. Never watch another
movie
again.
That is true.
Never
like,
share.
I don't know how. Like, that is a movie where, like, especially if you're a guy.
Yeah.
And you're, like, able to rent a movie from Blockbuster. How the fuck do you not like
this was
movie?
A guy like
how is that even physically possible?
At the time I was probably like 17 or 18. This guy was like 40, you know, in his early 40s. It's like, you've never seen Lethal Weapon. You need to rectify that. And the fact that you don't like it, I literally told him, I was like, don't shop here anymore. Like, don't even watch movies.
I love it.
Don't watch movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
nothing will make you happy, sir. Nothing will make you happy ever.
Yeah, it's like, well, what do you like? Like, what, like I'm curious now. Where like, what, go? Like, where, what turns you on now?
Exactly.
Like, what, I am actually curious now.
I had to deal with that.
I'd be so flabbergasted. On a weekly basis. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I used to have people come in and, like, they would rent, like, the new movie that's on the shelf and they'd be like, how is it? And I'd be like, I saw it weeks ago when it was in the theater, months ago when it was in the theaters. And I'd be like, it's not good. I'll be honest with you, it's not good and stuff. And they'll be like, oh, I'm going to try it anyway. And I was like, good. Good for you. Yeah, try it. And they'll come back like, this is fucking terrible. And it's like, I tried to tell you. I mean, I did. I want my money back because it was bad. It's like, you don't get to do that. Like, that's not how this works. You got your 2 hours of entertainment.
So you got that a lot, huh?
All the time.
People wanting money back.
Yeah. I worked in the Yardley Blockbuster. So if you guys don't know Yardley, it's a little bit little upscale. I'm doing my pinky up. So I mean that's the type of place I worked in and stuff. But it was really cool because instead of being open till midnight, like every other Blockbuster in the world, we closed at 9 because Yardley had an ordinance that all retail stores had to be closed
by
9.
Lucky you.
So that caused other arguments where it's like, well, I tried to return my movie on that day, but you guys were closed at 9 and like getting all mad at us and I'd be like, whatever. Dude, you pay your late.
Sorry, bro.
You pay your late fee, motherfucker.
You can afford it.
You can afford it. I saw that Land Rover out there. You can afford it, motherfucker. All right, so Jay.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
We're just taking time. We're trying to fill our hour here. Fucking around.
It's all good.
You got a number one.
Memories.
You got a number one.
Number one. This was tough, but I feel like you know what it is, and I'm gonna probably you probably don't know, but you probably don't. But I'm going with the Before series.
Talking seriously here, I mean I always feel this pressure of being a strong and independent icon of womanhood and not making look like my whole life is revolving around some guy. But loving someone and being loved means so much to me. I always make fun of it and stuff. But isn't everything we're doing in life a way to be loved a little more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I dream about being a good father and a good husband. And sometimes that feels really close. But then other times, it seems silly, like it would ruin my whole life.
The Before series is something that will always, 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 always be near and dear to my heart.
This influenced you so much on, as a young adult, I think, more so than anything else.
Yes. So this was in the phase two where like a lot like Blow and stuff like that, where I saw Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, and I literally got flown out into the world of love. and felt the magic, but not even just that, but not just the love story, but the fact that movie making in this kind of way was so special and genuine and small and taut and so beautiful, and just it was a slice of life,
Richard Linklater,
that I've never experienced before in a movie.
No one does slice of life like Richard Linklater.
But to their credit also, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, the three of them are responsible for this whole trilogy. And it's just so well executed and well done. And I bought the fucking romance and the dialogue and the love.
And why wouldn't you?
100%. Like, it just seemed like they were not acting whatsoever. They were in love. They were in Paris. And, you know,
they were not in Paris. And before sunset.
I know. I bounce around between Before Sunrise. You're talking about before sunset,
which is Vienna.
And I do. I bounce around before and Before Sunset being my number one or number two.
The only reason I can sit here and I can correct you on this,
yes,
is because this is one of the few times you've been successful at getting me into something and getting me on your level.
On my level, even. Not even just saying like, oh yeah, I like it, but like actually like loving it.
On your level, I love it.
It's true.
I do. Yeah. I hope to one day get my wife to watch it, but my wife is not.
You have to let her find it. I think.
She's not into talkie movies. This is too talky. This is conversations. I love conversations. I think the art of conversation is lost in the world.
Yes, and it is. Yes, it is, Dave. And this is, I think, one of the things that I wanted in my life, and I still want something like that in my life. Like, I have that with certain friends in my life, right, who I feel comfortable enough to be that way around.
It is,
because I am very reserved when it comes to like being social and talking to people in groups and stuff like that. So when I find people like that and I find circumstances that feel organic and feel genuine, I explode all over it.
I think we should do a little bit of explanation here, because I think your deep film fans already know what this series is.
Oh yeah, I probably am not explaining myself too well. I'm sorry.
So for other people who aren't familiar with Linklater, who aren't familiar with this series, we've talked about it a bunch of times, but
we have a lot of new listeners, I know.
This is your 30-second elevator pitch to get people listening right now to check out Before Sunset and then Before Sunrise, then ultimately Before Sunset and Before Midnight.
Yes. So, okay. So
elevator pitch, go.
Right. Before Sunrise. This is a movie where it follows a European boy and a girl on a train who have a nice little meet-cute. They meet on a train. They have a time to go out in Vienna and explore the night. And just to do it, because they had the time and they're young and they fall in love and they just go from location to location in Vienna a la real time, and they just fall in love, and the conversations that be had within them is so magical and so beautiful. And so
30 seconds up.
It's fantastic. And they make a pact at the very end of the movie to meet.
30 seconds is up.
No, I'm sorry, but yeah, I have to finish my thought. Finish to meet. You're fucking with my head. To meet 1 year or like 6 months or whatever it was from now at the same location.
Right.
And that's it. And it just leaves an ambiguous note, like they just part ways and hopefully they meet and you don't know.
And
it's just a beautiful ending.
It is.
And hence 9 years later.
I hope you liked my rendition of Girl from Ipanema. while you're giving your elevator pitch.
I always love that movie. That song. And then and 9 years later, without even questioning, out of the nowhere, you know, they just dropped this movie on our lap.
Yeah.
The people that love this movie.
It's kind of become a tradition for me and you now to like every 9 years go. When we went to the theaters together to see Before Midnight.
Because that was also a secret production, and they shot that in Greece. And, you know, that was also 9 years later. And it was just one of those things that nobody expected this. This is a trilogy that should not be. It should not exist. It is a small indie movie that has been slowly been brought out and explored and found from people, and they love it, and they you know, it's not for everybody, obviously, like Lauren and stuff like that, but for the most part, I think people can appreciate the genuine
June
aspect of this movie.
2022.
Mm-hmm.
You can look forward to hopefully another before movie, because the last one
they
came
never
out.
Wrote it off. They never said like. Never say never. They pretty much said never say never. Like, if they have the right idea,
right,
and are all three of them are behind it, they'll explore it. Well, and they'll get into it. And they'll make it if they can.
I truly love this movie. I do hope people check it out based on your recommendation. If they haven't already, they're, you know, big fail films.
But it's then, like, in the second movie, they meet up again.
Right.
Third movie,
they're old.
Go on.
They're middle aged and married.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it's something that. It's just a beautiful
film. It feels
so
an organic relationship, and very
organic.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that, you know, I just aspire to have in my own life, you know.
Which is why you are still single, because you're basing a relationship based off of fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is what this movies are. Maybe. Fantasy.
But I've had it.
But one of the beautiful things about the movie is each one ends with a fantasy, right? Like,
sure.
Like, the first one ends with them. We'll meet in 9 years.
It's dreamlike.
Well, I'm sorry. We'll meet in a year. That's the fantasy. And the second one is, I'm staying. I'm leaving my wife. That's the fantasy. And then the third one, you know, the fantasy has become reality, and it's like, mm-hmm. what is reality?
Now
it's not the fantasy. I mean, that's it. It's just not the fantasy. And that's one of the things that I love about it. Cause I always see these movies, since they take place every 9 years, they grow with their audience.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do.
And I think,
and
like,
they keep it grounded.
And it's really tough, because I think when I watched Before Sunrise, when I watched that, I was in my very early 20s, you know, when you and I first met, and I watched it. And then I watched Before Sunset, when I was kind of in like a pretty committed relationship that mm-hmm. was going somewhere and stuff like that. And by the time I saw Before Midnight, I was out of that committed relationship and I was single and stuff like that. But I saw, like,
you've been through the ringer.
I've been through it. Like, yeah. I've been through it with them and stuff like that. So I know this has been a long time to talk about a number one that maybe some people listening haven't heard of, but I think it's a testament to, like, you know, maybe I don't want to say take a weekend and watch these, because I think that's a lot to take on.
Oh, I don't think so at all. These are short movies.
For you, it's not.
Well, they're all within an hour and 45
minutes. You're asking
minutes.
People to take on 5 hours of two people talking.
Okay. Yeah.
5 hours of two people talking.
Okay.
I'll
do it tomorrow.
Why do you think I split episode 200 up into three separate parts?
I know.
Because no one wants to hear 5 hours of two people talking. So, but yeah, I do encourage everyone to check out Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight.
Thank you.
And I hope they do. And hey, guess what? We have a hotline that's open for everybody. So you can reach out to the hotline. I'll put it in the description of the show.
Please do.
And if you watch it, you can let Jay know what you think of his boring indie films.
Well, and to be honest, it's always been a funny thing, because I still hate it, even when I go on dates. What's your favorite movie? I'm like, oh, why are you doing this to me? And for the longest time, I actually would say the Before series.
I don't even say anything. Just say, date me long enough and maybe I'll find out. Be mysterious,
see,
Jay. Mysterious.
This is why I'm single too, because nobody wants to date me long enough. I'm not cute. I'm not cool enough. I'm not interesting enough. I'm not dark and mysterious like you. I don't have quick.
Oh no,
quick comebacks like you do.
You are. You just don't know how to sell yourself, right? like you immediately.
And oddly enough, I got into sales. Go figure.
No, I think
I'll be fired within a year.
You just get into situations where you feel like you need to be that person, and you don't though. You don't. Sometimes the girls are just looking for the boring guy who wants to sip his beer and hear them talk. What you need to do is use the gift that God gave you, and it's the fact that you're deaf in one ear. So just ask her questions, and when she's answering them, turn the head and ignore it, because you can't hear out of one ear. And then when you feel like she's done talking, turn around, ask her another question. You could be a great listener, Jay. And still tune her out and not have to worry about it at all. Live in your own head for your whole life. That is the way to a true, wonderful relationship.
Dave's therapy service.
Dave's therapy service. All right, Jay. My number one. We're running a little long here, but I don't care. This is just fun. We're just vamping here. My number one, Jay. I think it's pretty obvious for anyone who knows me, anyone who's listened to the show. My favorite thing in the entire world. My favorite movies are Star Wars movies. And interestingly enough, A New Hope, as it's called now, originally Star Wars. I never saw that until I was much, much older. The first Star Wars movie I ever saw was The Empire Strikes Back.
What's going on, buddy? You're being put into carbon freeze.
What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me.
The Empire will compensate you if he dies. Put him in.
I'm not ready to die.
Hey, listen to me, Chewie. Chewie, this won't help me. Hey,
save your strength. There'll be another time. The princess, you have to take care of her.
You hear me? Huh?
Love you.
I know.
That's my number one.
Oh, yeah.
The Empire Strikes Back. It has influenced so many aspects of my life. But, like, my first introduction to Star Wars world was a snowy planet. I didn't even know who Luke Skywalker was. I just know that, like, he, like, reached out with his hand and, like, things flew to him, right? And then he chopped off a fucking Wampa's arm. He lived inside of a weird kangaroo goat creature. Mm-hmm. And then, like, he kissed his sister. Like, that's what I knew about Star Wars.
Well, no, I mean, so did you see which movie did you see first?
Empire Strikes Back. And then Return of the Jedi. I didn't see A New Hope until I was probably about 10 or 11 years old, and someone bought them for me for Christmas on VHS.
Really? Really? So it took you that long?
Yeah. So I probably saw Empire Strikes Back when I was about 4 or 5 years old and fell in love with it. And fell in love with all Star Wars and fell in love with Indiana Jones and stuff like that. Where's Indiana Jones on this list? It's in the honorable mentions with like a lot of other stuff, because even though I saw it when I was a kid, for me as a kid, it was always, I'm watching Han Solo play an archaeologist. Like, it wasn't until I got older that I understood the character of Indiana Jones in that movie and what it was. But, you know, I first saw...
Stay tuned. we got Indy coming back.
I first saw Star Wars because my dad taped them on VHS. My dad used to get like these 6 to 8 hour long VHSs that you could put into your VCR, mm-hmm. and you could tape movies off HBO. And HBO, apparently for some reason, had Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, but not the original Star Wars. So that's what we had on VHS. So that's what I watched. I watched Empire and I watched Jedi, and I watched them over and over and over and over and over again. And that was Star Wars to me until, like I said, someone bought me the VHSs for Christmas, and that was the first time I saw Star Wars. That's the first time I saw A New Hope, and I remember watching it and just going like, huh, that was interesting. You know what I mean? Because it's really not like Empire and Jedi.
I know.
Little bit less action. You know, the action's kind of saved for like
it's
the
a lot
third
different.
Act.
It's yeah, a lot different.
It's a little bit different. So, like as a kid, like I was like,
well, I think as an adult, you understand why,
right?
Obviously, because you understand films and the way the structure of it is and how they're made and how sequels are made and like how they always evolve, you know, differently than the original movie.
Exactly.
So, you know, but I did not know that. I don't think we ever actually talked about that before.
Yeah.
Cause I actually was curious about that. I didn't know that was so you saw 2 and 3 over and over many times before you saw one.
No, I saw 5 and 6. I'm just fucking with you. I saw Empire Strikes Back. But
sure,
I mean, it just spoke to me in this way because like the vehicles were so cool. The weapons were so cool, right? Mm. A lightsaber was cool, but like, you know, an AT-AT walking across the snow and then a snow speeder coming in and harpoons and tow cables and tripping them up and stuff like that. fuck, I was brought right into it. But then, like, you get the later stuff, and Cloud City was just so awesome to me. Lando was infinitely cool to me as a kid, where I used to walk around and be like, whoa, 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 what have we here? You know, like, I used to pantomime being Lando Calrissian,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This tiny little white child walking around talking like he's selling Colt 45. But I mean, like, and Chewie was like, oh, but he was the family dog to me. Like, I love Chewie.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah. That's why you love dogs.
I remember, like, being a kid and, like, being upset. Not that Han was getting put in carbonite, but being upset that Chewie was upset that Han was being put into carbonite. That upset me. Don't make him sad. He's going to rip your arms off. He's a Wookiee. Of course, I didn't know that then because I didn't see A New Hope, so I didn't know about Wookiees ripping people's arms off. But, you know, it was just like, it was just this thing that just lived in me, and it's just weird to be a kid and watch something that you technically have no context for, right? I had no context for the story. I had no idea what was going on because I never saw the original one, but I knew immediately who Luke was, what he was, and what he meant to me as like a hero going up against the black cladded figure that was Darth Vader, and the evilness of his voice, and the fact that his lightsaber was red, which immediately just signified to me that he was the bad guy. Red and blue, always, you know, one good, one bad. Like, that's the way a child's mind works when they're watching this movie. And I remember just like it ends, but for me, Empire Strikes Back was, as a kid, it was never the dark, dour ending that people always talk about, right? Because after I fast forwarded through the previews that my dad taped for HBO, Return of the Jedi started right after that. It was always, they were always one into the other. They always just bled right into each other. So it the story never just ended for me. It always continued. There was always something else on that VHS that's coming up. Which, and I've talked about this on the show before, it's, you know, movies being taped off of HBO is one of the reasons I love movies so much. It's why, like, I, to this day, and I've talked, I know I've said it before, but I've done it again. I can't watch Ghostbusters without watching Gremlins immediately after, because both came out in 1984, both played on HBO back to back, and my dad taped them back to back. So when I was a kid, they just rolled right into each other, and to this day, it just feels natural for me to roll right into the next one. So I can watch A New Hope, and then
I understand the sickness, right,
and then not watch anything else. But if I watch Empire Strikes Back, I have to watch Return of the Jedi right after it, because that's how it worked for me in our VHS collection growing up, of my dad taping movies off HBO. So I know, like, I always talk about my mom being my influence for movies and stuff, because she used to put these movies on to, like, keep me to keep me complacent as the fucking devil child that I was. Right? Like, it truly was the holy water. This was the power of Christ compelling me was to put on these movies and stuff. But really, I wouldn't have any of that if my dad didn't tape them off of HBO back in the day. My dad didn't tape them off of TV.
And you wouldn't know any better.
And I wouldn't
know how to do it.
Right. But it's influenced how I watched movies, where, like, I'm able to, like, understand why this movie is like that movie and why they belong in that genre, and why sometimes watching this one thing makes me want to watch this other thing, even though they're technically not related, but thematically they are.
Interesting.
Because, like, that's the way the VHSs were always presented to me. My dad taping movies off HBO was my, if you like this,
right,
maybe try this.
Right. Which is great.
Which is great. My dad.
That's your dad's own version of that.
Yeah, my dad was the original. Was the original streaming service.
Good job, Tony.
For me. It's the original streaming service. That's why I love movies. But I mean, ultimately, Empire Strikes Back was just that thing that, like, I think as a kid, I probably sat pretzel in the middle of the floor and with my jaw opened, watching that as many times as I possibly could. And we still have that VHS, by the way. It is.
Frame that motherfucker.
It is.
How is that not framed?
I'm pretty sure it's in my parents' closet.
It should be hanging up here on a wall somewhere.
In a spare bedroom. If you go up their stairs, you go left.
Go get that motherfucker.
There's a closet and there's a bunch of taped VHSs of ones that I kept. And I'm pretty sure that that one is up there on that shelf. It's still there. So maybe. I don't know if if it's even watchable anymore, Jay. I'll be honest with you.
It doesn't have to be.
I probably wore that shit out. It's part of my history and it's part of what makes me a movie fan. It's why this is a movie that made me.
And possibly why, if that didn't happen, we would not be talking right now in these microphones.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I don't think I'd love just, movies as much as know. I do. But that's going to do it for Super Movie Brothers this evening.
Yes.
We still have another episode 200 segment that's coming in right after this. So that is where I sit down with Wayne and Paul from the Countdown Pod.
Without me.
Without Jay. That was not intentional. Jay was always supposed to be there, but unfortunately, scheduling between, you know, Perth in Australia and here on the East Coast of the United States, the only time that worked for them was a time when Jay had to work at his second job. So it was never intentional to cut Jay out of that. But believe me, if you listen, Jay's there. Even if it's just him being made fun of. He's there. So I want to thank all of you guys for listening. Have a great one.
Cheers.